Welcome to the Baby Weight Podcast, brought to you by Omaha Better Birth Project. Omaha Better Birth Project is a nonprofit organization. Our mission is to decrease inequities in childbirth by providing access to doula services, childbirth education, and prenatal and postpartum support for low-income and teen families. Find out more about Omaha Better Birth Project online at www.omahabetterbirth.org. Welcome back to the Baby Weight Podcast. On today's episode, we are going to talk about provider red flags, how to tell if your doctor or midwife might not be supportive of the birth that you want. A couple of disclosures before we get started here. This is not an exhaustive list, so your provider might check all of the boxes here, but they still might not be the right one for you. And second, we are not medical providers, so this is in no way meant to be medical advice. We are just here for peer-to-peer support and sharing of information.
The first provider red flag that comes to my mind is when a provider uses phrases such as, we don't allow, dot, 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 or, yeah, we might be able to do that, or we might be able to let you X, Y, and Z when talking about birth plans or birth wishes.
Yeah, I think that's a huge red flag. So a lot of people forget that pregnant and expecting people have full autonomy.
Yes.
So the doctor doesn't allow you to do anything. Right. You just can do anything.
That's exactly
It's not their choice.
Yes.
And a doctor that uses those words comes across as very controlling and you're going to do it their way or no way.
That's exactly right.
And that's not a good fit for a lot of people. And some people want that. Some people want to just have somebody who's just going to be like, hey, here's what I do. They tell them up front and they're okay with that. But a lot of people, that's not the case.
Exactly.
They need that autonomy. They need to be able to have their wishes heard.
That's right.
And respected. The first one that comes to mind when you said that was, we don't allow women to push in any other position than on their back.
Right, right.
That's a really common one here in the United States.
Yes, which is unfortunately an incredibly inconvenient way to push
right.
for anybody but the doctor, the provider.
No, it was 100%. That's why we do it, was for the benefit of the attending physician or midwife, because you got front row seat, you can see everything going on, and
right.
you can use all the instruments you want in that position.
That's it.
All of that stuff. So when you start putting the pregnant person in different positions, it does get harder.
It does.
On
absolutely.
The provider. But they should be able to adapt to that if that's something
that
they want to do. So
absolutely.
That's definitely a huge red flag.
Yes. And we know, too, that hospitals have certain policies. Doctors have certain ideals. But those things aren't laws that we need to follow. And ultimately, these providers work for us. And we need to remember that when we're birthing, that we can do what we want. So that's a big red flag for me.
Another one that I hear about a lot is, doctors saying, oh, well, she's got a small pelvis, or gosh, I think your baby's just getting really big. And they start insinuating that you need to be induced and or have a C-section.
Yeah.
And, as with many things on this list, it is not an evidence-based practice. So the chances of somebody's pelvis being too small to birth a baby is pretty rare. There are certainly instances where that's going to be the case, but for the general majority of people giving birth, that's extremely rare that their body grew a baby too big for them to birth.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you have gestational diabetes or
a previous pelvic fracture trauma. Yeah.
Pelvic trauma that might have
changed
the shape of your pelvis or something. But like I said, the vast majority of people giving birth, you can push out big babies. I think majority of the time, it's not the size of the baby, it's the position of the baby.
Absolutely.
So this goes back to whether your provider allows you to push in different positions or allows you to labor in all sorts of different positions, which can help a larger baby move down.
Absolutely.
Oh, also big babies. This is a soapbox of mine. So ultrasound estimates at the end of pregnancy are notoriously wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
Notoriously wrong. They can be plus or minus 1 to 2 pounds.
Which is a huge difference.
That is huge.
Yeah, when you're talking about a little 7-pounder,
oh
I mean, come
gosh.
On.
Yes. So, providers who start using those, it's almost like a scare tactic to push you into an induction or push you into a C-section, because it, you know, chances are it would make their job a little easier if, right, if we just did those things. So.
Well, and from personal experience, I can say hearing the words big baby when you're already a little apprehensive about how it's going to go down is like the worst thing you can do. It's just like one of those little like worms that get mm-hmm. in your head, and no matter how much you know the statistics, how much you're prepared, it still kind of, it does kind of niggle at you a little bit of like, oh, can I do this? Can I not do this? So that's a huge red flag. That's something that you should definitely be wary of.
Yeah. Another one, and this kind of goes along the same lines, but, you know, talking about inductions or interventions when they don't really have a medical necessity for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. You know, oh, you know, you are getting kind of big. Are you getting really uncomfortable? Well, maybe we should just schedule that induction, you know, when there really was no medical need for it. Obviously, if there's a medical need.
Yeah.
Of course, then people are going to usually choose those interventions.
Right.
But a provider that just starts bringing them up with really no mm-hmm. due course can be a...
Or says, hey, I'm going to be out of town the next 2 weeks and your due date's coming up awfully soon. If you want me to be there for the delivery, we should probably schedule something or put something on the books.
Oh, and this happens all the time.
It does. You'd be shocked. Yeah,
and that's just, it's infuriating because these providers are just so obviously prioritizing their time over the safety of your birth and the birth outcomes. Right. You know, interventions and inductions that are not for medical reasons, that's not an evidence-based practice. This is not going to improve birth outcomes. If anything, it's just adding risk to a birth that doesn't need to be there.
That's right.
Yeah. Another one we talk about a lot is providers who don't like working with doulas.
This one never fails to amaze me. I don't understand it.
Right. It's an evidence-based practice. Yep. Doulas improve outcomes. They reduce C-section rates. People with doulas report much higher levels of positive birth experiences.
Yes.
Why would a provider not want doulas?
Right. The only reason why I could think, we don't like doulas is because they don't want to be questioned on maybe questionable choices they're trying to make for people. Mm-hmm. I mean, in my mind, there's no logical reason why you wouldn't want that person to have the most support possible, especially because you don't have a labor nurse that's going to be in the room with you. You know, these labor nurses are juggling 5 or 6 patients sometimes, and they can't be in there all the time. It just makes sense to have that person with you.
I know. And doulas, I mean, they certainly can be advocates for their patients, but they really help. I think this is one of the other reasons, is that doulas can really help the family themselves learn how to advocate on their own behalf.
Yes,
and
definitely.
I feel like some providers just don't want that pushback.
Yeah.
They want their patients to come in and be good little patients and just do what they're told.
That's right.
And patients that are educated and have that support behind them to feel empowered to question things mm-hmm. and kind of, you know, if they desire, go against the grain a little.
Yeah.
Providers don't like that.
Absolutely.
And that can be a big red flag. So.
Yeah, that's like the biggest red flag almost, is if your provider is getting haughty and hostile with you because you're asking questions, you know, get on out of there. That's a problem.
Yes.
So.
Another soapbox of mine. VBAC calculators. So if you don't know what VBAC is, it's vaginal birth after cesarean. So once a C-section, not always a C-section anymore. Don't let them fool you. But there was something created several years ago called the VBAC calculator. And the idea behind it was to estimate your chances of having a vaginal birth after cesarean. So if you go and have a trial of labor, what are the chances you're going to have a vaginal birth versus a repeat cesarean? And it uses a variety of different data points to quote unquote calculate this number for you. But they are not evidence-based, and that has been shown time and time again, especially
for people who get a really low score on the VBAC calculator, it's hugely off from what actually happens in the real world. So people who are scoring low are still going on, 70% of them are still going on to have a vaginal birth after cesarean, which is, we have known for a long time, if everybody was given the chance to have a vaginal birth after cesarean, about 70% of them would have one.
Right.
The vast majority of people. So VBAC calculators, not only are they inaccurate, but they also still include race as a factor, which has been debunked time and time again. Race should not be a factor in whether or not someone has a chance to have a vaginal birth. It is not a factor. So I'm vehemently against VBAC calculators. But some people, there are some expected people who want to know their score just because it gives them a peace of mind. It helps them maybe make a decision if they're really struggling with whether or not they want to try this. I feel like a lot of times they're used as fear-mongering. Yes. If somebody gets a low score, your provider, who already is questionably supportive of VBACs, is really going to push you in the direction of, well, I really don't think you should try that.
Right.
And that's just not informed consent.
Yeah, absolutely. Another red flag that I've been thinking of a lot lately is a provider who doesn't have their birth outcome statistics available.
Yes.
For their patients. This is something that I think everybody should ask for, whether you've birthed with this provider before, haven't. Every doctor knows, every provider, every midwife knows what their outcome statistics are.
I think a lot of people don't even know that they can ask these things.
Yeah.
Definitely ask. So yeah, like they track, you know, their cesarean rate. So what percentage of their families are birthing by C-section? They track what epidurals rates. Yes. They track episiotomy rates. Instrumental delivery rates.
So like forceps, vacuums, all of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this can be a huge indicator of the type of births that a provider has.
Yeah.
If they have a high C-section rate, that automatically increases your C-section risk.
Yes.
Automatically.
And they should be proud of those numbers. If you ask about them, they should say, my personal number is X percent, whatever it is. And they should give you the documentation, I would hope, to back that up. I don't know if they would or not, but if somebody is hesitant or tries to sidestep the question, that's like where you have to really kind of double guess what they're trying to get at there, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every provider knows their numbers, and if they don't know them off the top of their heads, which I'll give them that, maybe they won't know it off the top of their heads.
Right.
But they certainly should be able to find those numbers for you and get them to you. And if there's pushback on that, then it just kind of hints that they're trying to hide something.
Right.
And again, that's a red flag.
Yeah.
Let's see. We've got something called, this happens all the time in the world of VBACs, is bait and switch. So
I'm a personal victim of the bait and switch.
Yeah, you want to tell that?
I will tell that story. I had a provider that I was bound and determined after my first C-section that I was going to go in and have a VBAC. And I just was so confident in myself and ready to go. I walked in at my 8-week prenatal appointment.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm going to have a VBAC with this child. And my doctor was like, well, yeah, why wouldn't you? Let's do it. And I was like, all right. I got this person.
It's great.
And then every appointment I went to, she would like throw in this little nugget of, you know, I had a patient who had a VBAC the other day and she tore so bad. She told me she would have just wished she would have done the C-section. And then I was like, oh, okay, well. And then she would say, she again with the big baby, another appointment, she would come in and she'd say, well, this baby's looking pretty big. Are you sure you want to?
Didn't you have little babies?
I did. I mean, I wouldn't say they were little, but they were. My biggest was my first. He was 8'5", and then I had an 8'2", and a.
By no means big babies.
No, my last one was a 6-pounder for Pete's sake. I don't know. but yeah, it got more and more aggressive to me almost until when I went in for my 41-week appointment, she literally like threw my paperwork down on her little table and she was like, all right, what's your plan? because if you're here next week, I'm going to make the decision for you. I was just like,
wait a minute.
At that point, you know, you're 41 weeks pregnant. You're tired. You're not sleeping.
Right.
You got a lot of things
working against you. Yes. Not to mention, what are the chances you're going to switch providers at 41 weeks? That's the bait and switch. They tell you what you want to hear for a long time until it's too late, where they're like, they just know you're not going to switch providers.
Right.
So they wait till the end and convince you to do what they wanted you to do all
along. And that's exactly what happened. I just burst into tears. I was like, just schedule a C-section. It was the most heartbreaking thing. And so I'm passionate about this one as well. And that's a huge red flag for me when I talk to people.
Yeah. So kind of ways to avoid that situation is early and consistent communication about your desires.
Yes.
Drill them on the details of these things. A lot of times in the bait and switch, it's a lot of, pushing it off till later. Oh, we'll talk about that later. We'll talk about that when we get closer to delivery.
Yep.
Those types of things. And, you know, so early, consistent, continuous communication.
Yeah.
Really drill them. And if the provider's really supportive of your desires and really understands your desires, so let's make that clear. You have to be clear about what your desires are with your provider. This is a two-way street. You know, we have to, you know, communicate our desires in detail, as well as they have to provide us with information on how they're going to meet those desires or not meet them and be honest about it. But, you know, that early consistent communication is what's going to hopefully, if there is a red flag, bring it up earlier. So you're not 41 weeks being thrown papers saying, make a decision in a very aggressive way.
So never mind, I'll just go have this baby behind the car somewhere.
Well, think about it. You know, you chose the C-section, but I'm certain other moms would have done that. They'd have been like, oh, no. I would rather go birth in maybe potentially an unsafe situation.
Absolutely.
You know, that doctor could have pushed someone in a completely different direction.
Absolutely.
So,
yes.
Man, I'm so sorry you went through that.
It led me here, so it's okay.
Oh, so I think the overall tone of all these red flags here is really, does the provider practice evidence-based birthing practices?
That's right.
And are they afraid of you advocating for yourself?
Yes.
So a lot of it is, one, they don't want to provide these evidence-based practices because they may be inconvenient for them, or, you know, they're old school and they just don't want to change their ways or something like that. But a lot of it is they just don't want pushback.
Yes.
And if you're getting those vibes from your provider, you know, maybe there's time to consider interviewing somebody else.
Right.
And seeing if someone else can meet those needs.
There's really no time where you can't switch providers.
Absolutely.
I mean,
I know people that have switched at 42 weeks. So
there you go.
Literally.
If you come into the hospital and you don't have a provider and you're in labor, they're not going to send you home.
They'll find you one.
They'll find you somebody.
Now, we're not advocating for that.
Absolutely not. I'm just saying, you need to empower yourself.
I know. A lot of people do. They're afraid to switch providers for various reasons. I've heard a myriad of reasons, but I will say overwhelmingly it's because they don't want to hurt the provider's feelings.
That was my case.
No.
Yep. Poor naive little Emily.
I've heard this phrase used in many places, and I can't agree with it more. We're maternity care consumers. They are providing a service for us that we are paying for, and so we can demand excellence from them.
Yeah.
And if they can't meet our demands, we go somewhere else.
Right.
And sometimes that's just fine. Sometimes a provider just knows this is not a fit. I cannot meet the wishes that you have. And that's okay. That's where the early communication comes in. If they tell you that up front, then you've got more time to go find somebody who can help you with those wishes. But don't be afraid to find a new provider.
You know, it took me until my third pregnancy to really understand this concept of your birth experience, your birth story for each one of your children, or something you're going to remember forever. And I think, Sam, I've talked to you about this before. It's something that it will be burned into your soul. And if it doesn't go the way that you hope it does, that can weigh heavily on your mind. The thing that I learned with my third pregnancy is that for the providers and for the delivery room nurses, this is another day in their very, very long career, hopefully long career. They won't remember you next week. They won't remember you next month. So you have to, again, advocate for yourself. Don't worry about feeling like you're a pain in the butt. Don't worry feeling like, you know, nobody, you want to hurt somebody's feelings. That doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, you need to remember this experience the way that you should, and you are, you know, that you desire to remember it.
Yeah, and a good fitting provider for your situation is going to help that happen.
Yes.
They're going to be there to walk you through the whole thing. So even if, you know, you mentioned that your birth doesn't go as you planned, I think rarely people's births go as they, you know, quote unquote, plan them to.
Yeah.
But the difference is, did your provider and your nurses and your support team make you feel empowered through the whole thing?
Yes.
Because you can have major emergencies happen, but still at the end of your birth have a positive experience and feel empowered by that experience, even if, you know, it was an emergency or things changed rapidly.
Very much so.
So finding that right provider who is going to help you achieve that type of birth, absolutely crucial.
Yes, yes, definitely. And lastly, the last red flag I think we should talk about, again, and just kind of reiterate everything else that we've talked about, is if you walk out of an appointment with your provider and you don't feel supported by that provider, or if you feel like you might have to fight to advocate for what you want in the birthing room or before, that is something that you really need to consider, because if you have to fight to advocate for yourself in the clinic room,
or imagine also, what's going to happen
exactly,
in labor
and
delivery.
It's going to be tenfold when you're trying to deliver. And trust me, when you're in that headspace, you're not in the mood to fight. So
no.
That's kind of one of the biggest last things I wanted to say as well.
Yeah, if you're feeling like every appointment you're in there fighting and really having to push for these things that you want, it might be time. Might be time to look elsewhere.
Definitely.
So. All right, so if this discussion has resonated with you, head on over to omahabetterbirth.org and check out our resources page. So we have a whole host of resources you can look at, such as evidence-based birth or the International Cesarean Awareness Network, that can provide you with a ton of information all about evidence-based practices in birth and different support networks that are out there. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Baby Weight Podcast. If so, please consider leaving a review to help us increase our visibility to reach more families. Check out our next episode, available now, all about birth doulas, with special guest Abigail Shipp, certified birth doula and childbirth educator.